Hey guys, it's Jill. Jen and I wanted to give you a heads up about the content on today's episode. It may be triggering for more sensitive audiences. Refer to the show notes for more specifics. And take care while you listen.
On this episode of Common Mystics, we explore the legend of Dolly Cole, a wise woman turned vengeful witch over the centuries by local tongue waggers. I'm Jennifer James.
I'm Jill Stanley.
We're psychics.
We're sisters.
We are Common Mystics. We find extraordinary stories in ordinary places. But today's story comes to you from Foster, Rhode Island.
That's right. And so, again, folks, we were headed east on Route 6, leaving Connecticut, going through Rhode Island, when we found a small place called Hopkins Mills. Mm-hmm. So Jen and I were exploring that area, and then right across Route 6, there was Hopkins Mills Cemetery.
Located in Foster.
That's right. Both Hopkins Mills and Hopkins Mills Cemetery are both located in Foster. Mm-hmm. So let's go over the hits as we're traveling around Hopkins Mill, and then we'll get to our hits in the cemetery.
You start us off with your hits.
Okay. So we got out of the car. We're walking around this small little hamlet of Hopkins Mills. And the land to me seemed really significant. It felt like energy was there, and we were walking around ancient lands, but we couldn't see the energy we were feeling. What were you feeling?
I was feeling a woman who was living in seclusion, like living on her own.
That's right. And I was feeling like the surrounding area was haunted, specifically Route 6, Stony Brook Creek, and Daniel's Pike. Those are the names that were coming up like on the road signs that I was like, haunted, 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 you're all haunted.
Yeah, I actually remember you saying haunted, haunted AF, haunted, you haunted, you know, like in Jill fashion. It was kind of entertaining. And when we were driving around Foster, I found myself looking for a mill, like looking for an actual mill.
That's
spoiler,
right.
There are no mills no longer standing. But
not
mills
that
would
we
be
found.
Important. Right, that's a good point. But mills would be important to the story, as it turns out.
And we were walking around Foster, and we found the South Foster Union Chapel building haunted AF. It's haunted. It like was like, hi, check me out. I'm really, really haunted. So we walked uphill to get to this building, and it felt like it was bustling with activity, although it was noticeably not in use for some time. Mm-hmm. Also, it felt like the church was used for more than just like church service.
Interesting. And I was feeling a witch or a woman who knew potions, knew healing, knew herbs, and being called a witch. So I was picking up on those two things. Like, is she a witch? Well, she knows how to heal. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right, right. And I think the difference between this conversation we had about witches from that we had in Hartford is that this woman seemed knowledgeable. She felt solitary. She felt like someone to you that was like, no, she knew her shit.
Right. But also the word witch came up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The word witch came out of your mouth.
Mm-hmm. And tell me what else you were picking up on.
I was picking up on this being logging or a logging community or them cutting down trees for some reason. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But then, so after we're done walking around this little hamlet of Hopkins Mills, we go across the street because there's a road sign that's like, there's the Hopkins Lot Cemetery across the street. And we're like, well, yeah, that's what we're here for. So we went across the street. And what was your feeling when we crossed the street in the car? What were we seeing? Tell me a little bit about that surrounding area.
Well, it's a really big cemetery, and it's on the corner of two major roads, Danielson Pike and Ram Trail Road. And there's a low stone wall, and there's an iron fence and granite posts. And the oldest part of the cemetery, outside and north of the railing on the northeast corner of the cemetery, dated to the 1760s. So that's a pretty old cemetery where we come from.
Yeah, it was. But when I pulled in the car, we drove past the cemetery and it looked like, and forgive me because I don't know how to describe this other than in my circle of reference. Growing up in Illinois, Dad would take us to a lot of forest preserves. Mm-hmm. And so we would drive up and it looked like an open spot for your car to sit as you would take a trail through the forest. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much where the exact kind of positioning we were. We drove past the cemetery that was on our left. We were sitting in an open field in the car, mm-hmm. and there was a trail ahead of us. And it felt to me like that trail was used regularly, but it also felt like somebody was watching us from that trail.
It was definitely a weird feeling, and that's where my phone was starting to act weird. If you listened to the Thomas Hepburn episode, episode 95, then you'll remember that my phone stopped reacting to me and did its own thing for like a minute, and it was super weird. But that was just the general vibe of the place. The whole place right. felt very charged.
Very much so. So mm-hmm. we get out of the car and I turn left to look at the cemetery, and immediately the first name that hits me is the name Cole. Mm-hmm. And it was like, that's our voiceless. Mm. Our voiceless will have the name Cole.
I love that. You are so psychic.
Stop your mouth right
now. I am so impressed with you. I can't wait to tell this story.
What were you feeling?
I was feeling a heavy heart and a burden of sorrow.
I love it. Well, not that I love it, but yeah, I love how affected you were by those feelings coming to you from spirit. Mm-hmm. Now, Jennifer, I know this is a little out of order, but can you please remind everyone of our intention that day?
Mm-hmm. That day, we had asked the spirits to lead us to a verifiable story previously unknown to us that would allow us to give voice to the voiceless.
That's right. And this voiceless name will be Cole. So tell me a little bit about the history of Foster, Rhode Island.
Jill, Foster is insane. Like, did you ever have one of those days where every frickin' thing goes wrong?
Yes.
If Foster was a day, it would be one of those days. Like, one thing after another. It's like, can you get a break?
Do you know what's weird is that when we were driving from Connecticut to Rhode Island, like literally the state line, different energy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Completely. It was almost like we are definitely in a different place. I get it why they marked this space as the state line, like a point of divide, because definitely there was a division in energy.
So some psychics laid down the boundary lines. Is that what you're saying?
I believe so.
Okay.
And if not, I will do it myself today.
Okay. Well, Foster today is a charming rural town situated at the northwest edge of Providence County near the Rhode Island, Connecticut border. And for millennia, humans have thrived in this area long before a European named Roger Williams claimed the land that would become Rhode Island in 1636.
Is he a country singer?
I don't know. Probably. It's such a generic name. I bet you he is. Roger Williams, 1636, claimed the area as Rhode Island. But of course, it's an ancient place where indigenous people have inhabited it for centuries. And it boasts a changing landscape over the years, and the humans living there had to like switch their survival strategies based on what was happening.
Okay, tell me what was happening that made that necessary.
Mm-hmm. So after the Ice Age, the climate was warming all over the globe, but here as well. And the glaciers were retreating and the sea levels were rising. And it was this transformation into spruce forests and lush deciduous havens. So the whole climate was changing. And during these years, the indigenous people learned to change with the changes in the natural world around them.
I love that.
Mm-hmm, and they foraged in the wild, and on the coastal shores and inland terrains, they lived there and made a life for themselves.
So it sounds like, from what you're describing, it seems like the indigenous people of the area were moving around with the seasons.
Well, funny you should say that, because they were on the sea to take advantage of the herring and the shellfish and the other seafood in the spring and the summer. But then they moved away to an area now known as Foster in the winter, and they hunkered down and they gathered firewood and they hunted the grounds. And yeah, by 1000 AD, they started introducing corn and squash and beans and pumpkin to their diet and started doing some farming and gardening.
Okay, so that was before the English came into the New World.
That is correct.
Okay, so what? Give me kind of a snapshot. Let's fast forward. Okay, right before the English come, what's going on?
Can I just ask you a question first?
Yeah.
Because it sounds like these indigenous people like had the place figured out. Like, you live here during this time of year, you live over here in this time of year, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which means they were semi-nomadic, right?
Right.
So they kind of had a winter home and a summer home.
It sounds very modern.
It does sound very modern, except they had to carry all their crap on their backs.
Or leave it.
Or leave it and come back
or
to
leave it. Exactly.
All right.
See, I wouldn't be carrying. I would be like, this is where my stuff is in the winter. This is where my stuff is in the summer. And then I would just travel back and forth.
See, I would pack everything, because that's
yes,
just
would.
Me. I would pack because I like to have options.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. True.
So
true.
I just think that's a really interesting lifestyle. And I think the indigenous peoples were up to, like, they knew something. They knew something that the Europeans didn't, because as we find out, shit doesn't go well for the Europeans.
Ooh, okay. Tell me everything. Now I'm excited.
So you have the explorers coming in. We know they started coming in around the 1500s, right around 1500. They start making their way over and they bring with them, wah, wah, disease.
God damn it.
I know. And the diseases just ravage the tribes that are living there, including the Narragansett. And from 1616 to 1617, these diseases actually devastated these coastal tribes and completely reshaped tribal dynamics and actually opened up a window for Europeans to come and take the land.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Europeans do what Europeans gonna do. They're gonna colonize, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna say, this is mine.
Yeah, and that's literally what stink bugs do by my house. They're like, right? We're going to do this. This is mine now. And then they just like inhabitate my home. And I'm like, that's some bullshit.
Didn't you hire someone to spray for stink bugs this year?
Yes, but now I'm just finding dead stink bugs everywhere, which is better than live. But still, it's like, dude.
They're still infesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So the first land acquisition leading to what is now Foster occurred in 1659, when Providence, Rhode Island settlers purchased and cleared the land west of the 7 Mile Line, which then marked Providence's western boundary.
Okay, 1659. All right, got you.
Yeah,
that sounds right.
That's when they purchased and cleared the land. Right, exactly. That does sound right. And they negotiated deals with the indigenous people living there.
Mm-hmm. And I put deals in quotations because you know that a lot of times those Europeans, they were like, what deal? Who said deal? Did I say deal?
But then under the supervision of the Providence Proprietors Committee, they started distributing the lands, the different 150-acre plots, in 1694.
Okay. Interesting.
That's over 30 years after they acquired the land.
Mm-hmm. So things are slow in Foster.
Very slow for some reason.
Okay.
Then the actual surveying of these parcels didn't begin until 1705, like 9 years later.
What is taking so long? Like, who's in charge of this? Why is it taking so long?
Exactly. Like, why? And this is when the colonists are coming over. Like, aren't they looking for land? Like, what is the problem with this plot?
Usually, just like in history and the research that I do, like they find the land, they want the land, they survey the land.
They take the land.
They survey it to divvy it up amongst themselves.
Right.
Right. So like, why is it taking 30 years to be like, okay, no, this is really going to be ours. And then another 10 years to be like, well, whose is it among us? Like, that's very bizarre and taking a long ass time.
Well, research shows that the land was more gravelly and sandier than they were used to, perhaps. And so cultivating crops was not easy. So that was a little bit of a hiccup.
So they're kind of testing the land first and like, maybe I don't want this one.
Well, I guess it would be.
Go across the street.
Right. Well, it's a process of elimination. You're coming to a completely new place. You don't know what crops are going to work. But the settlers were able to use the land eventually for agriculture and lumbering. I believe you had mentioned lumbering earlier.
I called that shit. Yes, right. I did.
Right. And the town of Foster was not officially incorporated until 1781.
Now that, again, is very long. That's 70 plus years before they're like, you know what? I think this can take off.
No kidding. Yeah. This area had a very hard time taking root.
Mm-hmm. Very unusual. So tell me about the changes during the turn of the century. We're talking late 18th century into the early 19th century.
Exactly. Well, there was a rise in local consumption and global demand for agricultural products. And so there was a need for swift transportation. And farmers and entrepreneurs saw that need right along the coast near Foster. And the result was an upgrade and expansion of the local roadwork.
Great. And so around early 1800s, they were like, let's make a road. Nice.
Right, exactly. And they combined existing roads and turned them into turnpikes that stretched from Providence to areas such as Foster, Rhode Island.
And when you say existing roads, you're talking about well-traveled trails that the indigenous people have marked out because
that's the way to do it.
That's the easiest way to do it.
Exactly. Why reinvent the wheel? They know the best way to get around.
Although I'm not sure because it's taken these people a long time to figure this shit out.
That's true. So with the roadways well-defined and well-maintained, the little hamlets in the area surrounding Foster begin to blossom. And a hamlet, by the way, isn't just a Shakespearean play.
It's not?
No. I had to look this up. It's just a collection of homes. A hamlet is smaller than a village. It has no central point. There is no city hall. There's no church. It's just a bunch of homes. So little hamlets started blossoming all around the area that we know today as Foster.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. So there were clusters of houses and lively taverns that involved structures shaping themselves to fit the community's changing needs and the ebbs and flows of economic and social life. Who wrote this?
That was me.
And the hamlets thrived on two essential ingredients. Ready?
Ready.
Accessible roads and community hubs.
Love
like,
it.
Like
that
taverns,
makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that to me is a successful hamlet if I have a tavern and a road to get there on.
Exactly.
Got it.
Very good.
So one such of these hamlets was, like we said earlier, Hopkins Mills.
Hopkins Mills. Hopkins Mills is a settlement founded by the Hopkins family, surprise, surprise, in northern Foster near the Paunagansett River by the Hopkins family in the 1720s. Now, the river was so important to the development of this community.
Okay, why is that?
Well, because the hamlet flourished around mills that the Hopkins families created.
Nice.
And by the mid-18th century, settlers around Hopkins Mills began expanding their land holdings, so the mills were successful at first.
Got it.
One noteworthy family was the Cole family.
Ta-da!
Nice job, Jill. You pulled that one out of your psychic butt.
I just think, I honestly, yes, I have a big psychic butt, but I feel like this land was so charged that it was easier to pick up on these things there. Like your phone. Like it was really easy for spirit to take control of your phone.
Yeah, that was nuts.
Yeah.
Well, Hugh Cole and his wife, Dorothy Cole, homesteaded a farm at Hopkins Mills that would eventually be used as a bed and breakfast hosting travelers to and from Providence, Rhode Island.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah. And Hopkins Mills is located where the quaint 18th century road from Providence to Chatmas intersected the Paunagansett River, and growth ebbed and flowed over the century. But it was the period between 1790 and 1830 that truly saw Hopkins Mills bloom. And they established a store, a tavern, and another kind of mill called a fulling mill.
Okay.
Do you know what a fulling mill is?
No, I do not.
Well, and I would have thought.
I was hoping you would not ask me that question.
I would have thought that the person who wrote this outline would explain the vocabulary in this outline. But I looked it up because I didn't know.
Tell me what it says.
Well, a fulling mill is used to make cloth when you can spin wool on your own, but the wool then needs to be treated in a certain way at a fulling mill to make it more like waterproof and hardier. And so that's a fulling mill was used to make a particular kind of cloth that would be more versatile.
It sounds like there's a number of small scale mills launching with great enthusiasm in this area.
Exactly.
So yay, I can see why Foster's bustling. Now what?
Except that most of them faced a rapid failure right after they were established.
Wah, wah, wah.
Well, when you have a mill on a river, you are relying on the water in the river to power it.
Right.
And unfortunately, there was increasingly inadequate water power to support the mill industry.
Someone doesn't have adequate water power.
And also, transportation was lacking as well. And you have funding and a lack of expertise. So just because you can make a mill doesn't mean you have the business know-how to make it successful.
Mm.
It's kind of like a podcast.
Well, I think the funding, when you think like they may had means to create something, but not knowing and understanding the terrain that they're living in, where to put their money is important. So like they're like, we have money, but I don't know how to use it to make this shit work.
Right. And remember those textiles that I was talking about, making of the cloth? For a little while, Foster's textile ventures began to take off, but then they just bottomed out. Out of the four mills that were initiated from 1810 to 1825, only one, the Ramtail Mill near Hopkins Mill, survived over 5 years.
Mm. Oh my gosh.
And that was because of a man named William Potter. Yay, William Potter.
Well, how'd he do it?
No relation to Harry, by the way. William Potter was successful in the mill business. By 1813, he expanded his operations by acquiring more land half a mile to the south, and he also took on partners.
Okay.
A business has got to be good if you can take on partners, right?
True. If you know how to work with your partners.
True. There are pros and cons of having a partner.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like family, of course.
Of course. Like sometimes your partner is a little mouthy.
Hmm. I disagree.
Alas.
You have a wonderful business partner.
Alas, clashes between William Potter and his partner, his son-in-law, Peleg Walker, ultimately sealed the fate of the factory, shutting its doors before 1850. So the one standout mill that was successful actually closed its doors as well.
Because of a family fight. Got it.
Exactly.
So this, to me, signals trouble ahead for Foster, Rhode Island. What's happening?
You got it. Oh, Jill. The town witnessed a dramatic drop in population from 1820 to 1830. And that's for a lot of different reasons.
Okay.
Would you like me to explain them?
I was waiting for that.
Yeah. So there was a large-scale surge of industrialism happening in New England. And the movement to more fertile lands to the north and west were also a factor. So New England is hustling.
Right.
So if you want to be in the manufacturing game, you're not going to stay in Foster, Rhode Island. You're going to hightail it to other bigger, more successful industrial centers.
With better landscaping to help those ventures. It
better
seems
land,
like they're really
better resources.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It seems like they're trying to like put a silk hat on a pig here in Foster.
Ooh.
Like they're just not able to do it.
Right. And also remember, we are still, I was not there. The Europeans are still colonizing. And so there's more options now to the north and to the west than there were previously. So why stay in Foster where the land is shitty when you can just move to better land now that we moved out? I wasn't there. Now that the Europeans moved the indigenous people out of the way.
I'm really starting to think you were there.
Maybe I was there.
But you look great.
Thanks. Also, there was better transportation and shipping and whaling off the Narragansett Bay. So there was a lot of allure to those people who wanted manufacturing and business success, even farming. Mm-hmm. They just moved out of Foster. And that can account for the drastic decline in population.
Well, not only that, I'm sure they were just tired trying to work with that shitty soil.
Mm. In fact,
and the lack of water pressure.
No kidding. In 1893, a chronicler painted a vivid picture of Foster. He wrote, "Homesteads left to crumble, a haunting sense of antiquity and abandonment lingering in the air."
Ooh. What? In as early as 1893, yeah. That's not very long. That's
no.
Only like 100 years.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's describing a ghost town like you would see today.
Yeah. That's insane. Because literally it wasn't incorporated until like 1780. Mm-hmm. And then here 120 years later, they're like, yeah, that shit went a bust. Oh, my Lord. Tell me. Tell me about Foster today and how we found it.
Sure. Well, today, visitors to Foster, Rhode Island can enjoy the beauty of Nickel Creek Vineyard, which is a charming family-owned vineyard offering breathtaking views of the landscape.
I love it.
Visitors can also explore the historic Foster Townhouse, which dates back to 1796 and still serves its purpose as the oldest government meeting house in the United States.
Well, how do you like that?
I feel like we should be, I feel like we work for the Foster Rhode Island Tourism Committee or something.
To be honest, there are really cool things in Foster Rhode Island, but I feel like the most coolest thing about Foster is that it's haunted as fuck.
Yes. Yes. Foster is actually renowned for its ghostly residents, which have been documented in works like Abandoned Villages and Ghost Towns of New England by Thomas D'Agostino.
I'll take it.
And featured on PBS's Haunted Rhode Island.
Oh my gosh.
And that PBS documentary focuses on one figure in particular.
Hmm.
It is the legend of Dolly Cole.
Oh my word. I am so excited.
Aren't you happy we got here?
I am so excited. Tell everyone about this legend because it is a powerful legend, I think.
In Foster, Jill, nestled amidst the tall oak trees and winding streams, legend has it, there lived a young widow named Dorothy Cole, affectionately known as Dolly by the townsfolk.
Mm.
Dolly was revered for her wisdom in matters of love and her knowledge of the natural healing remedies available in the forest and woodland.
You called that. Mm-hmm. Continue.
And Dolly was a comforting presence in the community at first. Her small cabin, a cozy refuge on the outskirts of town, was adorned with blooming wildflowers that she tended to with care. Now, legend has it that one fateful spring day in the year 1860, tragedy darkened the skies over Foster.
Uh-oh.
A group of fiercely superstitious men, driven by fear and misguided beliefs, set Dolly's humble cabin ablaze. Unbeknownst to them, Dolly's young daughter was inside the cabin, playing innocently as the flames licked at the wooden walls. Despite Dolly's valiant efforts to rescue her precious child from the flames, the fire's relentless embrace proved too powerful, and she watched in horror as the flames consumed everything she held dear. Heartbroken and scarred by the searing loss of her beloved child, Dolly's once gentle spirit was overshadowed by a thirst for vengeance against those who had wronged her. She retreated to the dense forest that bordered Foster and nursed her sorrow and plotted revenge. The townspeople, sensing the shift in her aura, whispered fearfully of her return, and their eyes scanned the tree line for any sign of her haunting presence. When Dolly emerged from the depths of the forest, her eyes blazed with an otherworldly fury. Dolly, driven by a potent mix of sorrow and fury, unleashed a curse upon the town of Foster. And the frightened men of Foster stood their ground against the vengeful witch. They attacked her with clubs and flaming torches and pushed her lifeless body into the creek. The once peaceful hamlet of Foster, from then on, was shrouded in an eerie silence, broken only by the ghostly whispers of Dolly's vengeful spirit and the curse that she had left on the town. And as the legend of Dolly's curse spread through the generations, tales of her ghostly apparitions stalking the edge of the forest became a chilling bedtime story for the children in the area. And to this day, locals claim to have glimpsed her ethereal figure moving among the trees, forever bound by her eternal vendetta against those who had wronged her in life. And that is the legend of Dolly Cole. Do we know anything about why they burned her humble cabin down?
I believe it's because she was known as a healer and someone to meddle with the metaphysical arts, mm-hmm. that they were superstitious and thought that she was like something against or abomination in their God's eye, mm-hmm. is my understanding of the legend.
What's interesting about this legendary account is that this happened in 1860, which mm-hmm. is 200 years after the witch crazes were happening. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It also is during the time where the town is slowly dying.
Mm. Because I mean, it's been dying all along, but I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Right.
For real.
Right. Rumors circulated about poor crops near the forest where Dolly died, animals act skittish for no apparent cause, mm-hmm. and technology malfunctions.
Oh my gosh!
Mm-hmm.
That happened to us.
That's exactly right.
Wow. So people also report seeing shadows in the woods and feeling chilling cold spots and hearing whispers echo in the solitude.
So Dolly's revenge mm-hmm. and the story, the legend of her curse captivates the townsfolks of Foster for generations.
Yeah.
The curse has become intertwined with the town's essence itself, mm-hmm. leaving an enduring imprint on the land and its inhabitants.
Right.
So, Jennifer.
Yes.
Can you fast forward to my research and tell me what we found out about Dolly herself and how much of this legend is based on truth?
Jill?
Yes.
None of that story is true.
What?
Sorry. I know, but it's so fun, but none of the story is true.
But it has a lasting imprint on the town that entwines Foster's.
I know. Sorry.
Legacy.
So there was a Dorothy Cole. I mentioned her before, who is married to Hugh Cole.
Well, tell me everything. What do we know?
Okay. So Dorothy Cole was a real person. She was born in Rhode Island in 1768, and she married Hugh Cole V in 1790 in Providence, Rhode Island. And the couple had three children, Hugh Cole VI, Joanna, and Aura. Now, her husband, Hugh Cole V, passed away in 1819 at the age of 62.
Do we know anything about him?
Well, he was a colonel in the Revolutionary War. He was a carpenter, overall good guy, and a descendant of James Cole of Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Okay, so he is a Puritan descendant. So he has those puritanical...
He has a connection to the Puritans of the 1630s.
Right. And probably has puritanical views on life and religion and morality and yada, yada, yada.
Well, I wouldn't want to conjecture about his personal character.
Okay. Other than he was a good carpenter. We know that.
He was a good carpenter and a Revolutionary War soldier.
Okay.
I feel confident stating those things.
And what do we know about our Dorothy?
Dorothy, known as Dolly, ran a charming bed and breakfast and tavern along U.S. Route 6. Well, today it's U.S. Route 6. Her establishment was popular with people, not only those in Foster, but across the region until her death in 1860.
Okay.
Yeah. And so Dolly, she was a revered and lifelong figure in Foster. And so she inspired various local landmarks to be dedicated to her memory, such as the Dolly Cole Bridge, constructed in 1923, and the Dolly Cole Hill, located east of Hopkins Mills, near her former residence, and also the tranquil Dolly Cole Brook that meanders through Hopkins Mills.
She was 92 when she died, so she spent her life living in Foster.
And serving the people in Foster and the surrounding areas.
And she was beloved.
She was.
Hang in there, guys. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. We are so excited to unveil the first book in our series entitled Common Mystics Present Ghost on the Road Volume 1, Murders and Mysterious Deaths.
It's everything you love about common mystics and more.
It's a retelling of 10 of our favorite stories from our pod with exciting extras.
Extras like souvenirs, what we took away from the experience, and what to know if you go, if you decide to travel in our footsteps.
Pre-order the Kindle edition now. All other formats of the book will be available for purchase at Amazon.com on July 1st, 2023.
Thanks, guys. Now back to the show.
Okay, so Dolly obviously is not the reason for Foster's problems, why is Foster haunted as fuck?
Well, I have to tell you that it is historically confirmed that Foster is a haunted site. We don't see this a lot, and we see a lot of haunted little towns.
Right, and this is the only historically confirmed haunted town in the official documents of Rhode Island.
Yes. According to the census of 1885, the Ramtail Mill in Foster was listed as haunted.
Eek! Tell me everything.
Okay. So this story dates back to before 1723. At the site where Thomas Hopkins established his mills, and the house and the mills stayed within the Hopkins family until nearly the end of the century when William Potter acquired them.
Nice. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we know him as the successful guy that built the mills. Okay, go on.
Absolutely. Now, after William Potter Sr.'s passing in 1837, the property and the business all passed down to his son, William Potter Jr. But despite the potential of the Ramtail Mill venture, operations ceased before 1850 due to, as I said, a dispute between William Potter and his partner and son-in-law, Peleg Walker.
Okay.
Tell me what's going on. This was the family squabble we referred to earlier.
Yeah. What's going on here?
Okay. So here's the deal. William Jr. and his brother Herbert were running the place with Peleg Walker. Now, Peleg Walker did the night watch. He worked overnight. And William and Herbert worked during the day. And apparently, there was a confrontation about money. They were
There's a problem. You shouldn't really, you know, combine family and money or, you know, those things. Okay. Go on.
Noted. Well, so there was a confrontation about money and a dispute. And there was a chilling incident when Peleg Walker disturbingly said that the Potters would require a dead man's key to access the locked mill.
Is the dead man's key a thing?
Well, no. He was referring to the fact that he had the key at night And I feel like it was a turn of phrase like over my dead body, like you'll get the keys over my dead body sort of thing.
Gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, as it turns out, the Potters came one night to get to the mill and they couldn't get in. And they broke the window and found Peleg Walker hanging from the pole rope.
Time. Okay, so let me just put a button on this because I want to make sure I understand it.
Okay.
So this is what's going on. The Hopkin families who's ran the mill and had control over the town or in that area of the town for about a century sells it to the Potters.
Yes.
The Potters' sons take it over during the day. We have William and Herbert. And William's son-in-law, Peleg, took over at night. So all three of them are investing in this mill.
Yes.
And there was a problem with the understanding of the investments versus the income, yada, yada. And there was a big argument. And then during that argument, Peleg was like, over my dead body, you're getting back in this place. You're going to need my dead man's key to get back into this place. And they're like, whatever, dude. So they leave for the night, let the son-in-law run it at night. And then in the wee hours of the morning, when William comes back with Herbert to get into the mill so they can take on their morning duties, it was locked and they had to break in. And when they broke in, they saw the son-in-law, Peleg, hanging from a rope in the factory, in the mill. Is that correct?
That is 100% accurate.
And that's a true story. And that's why that story was in this building is listed in the official census documents as the Haunted Mill.
Correct. Because legend has it that thereafter, after this death, the bell atop the mill roof would ring vigorously at midnight, even in the absence of the pole rope. So there was no pole rope. And yet, in the middle of the night, the bell would ring on its own vigorously, not just kind of swaying with the wind, but freaking ring.
Okay, what happened if they removed the bell? Because I would be like, take the bell down, fuck that.
No shit, they did that. They removed the bell, but according to legend, that only provoked the ghost to engage in further mischief. It made the mill wheel, which was powered by the Paunagansett water, to spin backwards.
Oh my.
That doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't.
And on one occasion, the factory was supposed to be running at full capacity with every wheel, loom, and spindle in motion, despite no one was there to operate it.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Three men once claimed to have seen a white figure with a lantern on his rounds resembling Peleg Walker. Ooh, now, the original Ramtail Mill was destroyed by fire in 1873. So that mill is no longer standing. And
it's
said, well, it's said to have been burnt to the ground by superstitious arsons looking to quiet the ghost once and for all.
I can see that.
I mean, that would be scary.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's shitty. But over time, doing this research for this podcast, we see that people like to cleanse things with fire a lot. And I put that in air quotes.
Yes, but if the spirit is still unhappy, even though it can't cling to a structure, it can still cling to the land.
Oh.
It doesn't make the spirit go away. It doesn't appease the spirit.
That's a true statement. What else then around the area is notable for some shiznizzle
could
cause hauntings?
We talked about Route 6 already and the importance of that road in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a 4-lane high-speed road, and it's actually the beating heart of Foster, and it connects it to Connecticut, New York, and the destinations of Providence, Boston, Cape Cod, etc. You get the drift.
Gotcha.
And of course, I already mentioned it's built on historic paths. And this route was the first road paved in Foster. So it's an old path. And in 1926, it earned its stripes as a U.S. route, cementing its place in the road network legacy.
Okay, so what's the problem with it?
Well, Newport Daily News out of Newport, Rhode Island, December 28th, 1960, page 4, states that there was a chain of accidents just past Dolly Cole's Hill on Route 6. 6 people were killed, and the headline was, "Calls that area of Route 6 a death trap."
Yikes.
But there's more.
Okay.
According to smartcitydrives.com, in an article from 2017, it says, "Suicide 6. You heard me. Suicide 6. Hartford, Connecticut to Providence, Rhode Island's unfinished interstate. And according to the article, non-continuous segments of interstate quality roads were grafted onto US 6, making for irregular travel across the state. And the journey between Hartford and Providence can be treacherous due to a number of interchanges and the abundance of automated traffic controls to manage the patchwork roadway. This is not to mention that the sometimes shoddy road quality and the driver on your bumper can also cause problems." So they're calling it Suicide 6 because it's easy to kill yourself on this stretch of road because it's a patchwork of old roads.
Mm-hmm. And that article from 2017 mm-hmm. points to an article out of Reader's Digest that ranks Suicide 6 in 1992 as one of the most dangerous tracks of highway right. in the country.
And there are a lot of deaths that have occurred over the years. A 45-year-old woman was killed in a 2-car crash in Foster that authorities suspect was caused by bad weather. 2 people were killed in a devastating head-on collision on Route 6 in 2018, and more deaths occurred. 2 teens died in a head-on collision in Foster on Route 6 in 2022. And in 2023, another accident happened. Road conditions are to blame on Old Hartford Pike and Plainfield Pike, 2 rollover accidents due to black ice on the roads. According to the South Foster Fire Department and Scituate PD officers, there have been a total of 5 deaths this morning already, all from the recent papers.
And that was all from that 5 morning accidents. That was from like December 2023. So that was like hella recent.
That was after we were there.
Yeah, it was. So Route 6 had been a site for other notable activities in the area. Can you please describe?
Well, Jill, this is kind of a curveball. I didn't see this coming. I did not see this coming.
I have tricks up my sleeve, moves you have never seen.
Wow. Okay. So Route 6 has also been the site of the Freemasons and Odd Fellows activities over the years.
Now, what are these things you speak of?
Oh, these are fraternities and very
meaning
old
all
organizations.
All male clubs, very old in rituals and practices.
And also very secret.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have connections to such groups as the KKK.
Oh my, tell me everything. And I just want to again say that a lot about what we learned about Freemasonry, we just learned from the Barry County episode. And we found out that they are playing with some magics, whether intentionally or just doing them out of tradition, that can stir up some energy, right? But
well, the KKK is not known for magic. They're not known for burning sage.
No, they're known for burning crosses and lynching people. So that kind of mojo is bad, too. But
yeah,
that's
going to leave a scar.
Yeah, that's going to leave some bad
juju.
Some bad things in there. So tell me about it. How are the Klan,
Jill,
connected to the Freemasons and Odd Fellows in Foster?
In the 1920s, the Klan ruled on the countryside, according to an article in 1999 by Robert L. Smith, a Providence Journal staff writer.
Speak to me. What does that mean?
He writes, "Their white hoods masked bankers, merchants, and even town officials. It's sort of like a secret that people don't talk about," says Scituate town historian Barbara Sarkeesian. "All the movers and shakers in the community, the Masons and the Odd Fellows, were all members of the Klan. In a state founded on principles of religious tolerance, America's foremost hate group found fertile soil, the historical record indicates." Shoot. In fact, June of 1924, 8,000 people rallied behind Foster Town Hall. This was a Klan rally.
Oh, gosh.
The same article said that the Klan rallies would take place faithfully at Odd Fellows Hall. So, yeah, there's historical evidence that the Odd Fellows and other fraternities were members and supporters of the KKK.
Which is, again, unusual because Foster is north of the Mason-Dixon line. Mm. But I do want to make note that it seems like this type of hate and intolerance really comes to us from struggling communities, mm-hmm. just saying. And as we know Foster to be one of those, especially because they peaked in the 1800s.
Exactly. Because Foster had, first of all, a slow initial development, and then mm-hmm. it had failed industry, and then it had dangerous roadways and even hauntings, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it's been through everything. But Jill, who's our voiceless? It can't be the town
of
Foster.
I think that. It can't be the town of Foster. It's definitely not the KKK.
I hate when you do that, by the way. You're like, the whole town needs a voice. You said that so many times.
Sometimes I believe it, but that's not true. I think it's Dolly Cole.
Tell me why.
Specifically. Okay. Well. Okay. So we, earlier that day, when we stumbled upon Foster, we also stumbled upon a tale of Puritans in Hartford, Connecticut, and they were executing witches at the time. Mm-hmm. And we recounted the story when we realized how ignorant and arrogant the Puritan individuals were, right? And we're like, back then, they were dumb as fuck. They were blaming anything on witches. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to modern times, we're driving through Foster, and we have the spirit of Dorothy Cole being like, hi, everyone today is saying I'm a witch because shit in Foster, it could have been better, and I'm not a witch, girls. And so that's why I feel like this story stumbled into our laps, that Americans today are attributing the challenges faced by Foster, Rhode Island to a witch's curse. Mm. And Dolly, in her 90s, a longtime revered resident of the community and the surrounding areas, had been named for so many places that they were like, oh, she must be a witch and she must be the reason why this town never developed into something greater than it ever could have.
Mm, that's not fair to put on Dolly.
No, that's some bullshit.
That is some bullshit.
She clearly is not a witch.
Clearly not a witch. And although the legend is a pretty fantastic story.
Yeah, but they could have choose anybody else. I just feel bad for Dolly.
No kidding. It's misogyny. It's misogyny that they choose a woman who happened to be running a business on her own. Right. Of course, mm-hmm. she has to be evil. She needs to be the person, you know, and who is bringing about all of this misfortune.
And again, this legend comes to us from modern day. Mm. This is not puritanical, like Jennifer said, tongue wagging. This is like today, the stories that we're telling our children. Mm-hmm. But Foster has some real problems. Real problems. Can we go through what they really are?
Sure. I mean, starting from the very beginning, the land was not meant to be permanently settled by farmers. I mean, it's just not good farmland. And it Mm-mm. also wasn't suitable to sustain a mill industry based on the movement of the river.
The indigenous people who lived there for 10,000s of such years before knew how to utilize the land mm-hmm. and its climate.
Right. But semi-nomadic.
Because the Europeans didn't know that shit, it led them to a series of misfortunes and unforeseeable events in the Foster area.
Right. Like late blooming settlement.
The growth peak of the area was in 1750, before the town was even incorporated.
I think we can just say late blooming settlement and go right to like angry racists. Can we just do that?
Yeah. Yeah, because you can't stress enough that angry racists and fraternal organizations fucking around with magics and killing people and like lighting torches ablaze, that's not cool. And that brings nothing good to any area, especially a struggling area.
What about the conflict and the death of Peleg Walker at the Ram Tail Mill? Do you think that was because of the bad mojo, or do you think that was part of creating the bad mojo in the area? Because that's a big part of what happened in this area as well.
I believe that that unfortunate accident, I say accident, I think that unfortunate series of events perpetuated the energy, but it was also caused by some of the energy, right?
Right.
I feel like when you're living in an area or in a house that's haunted, you're really affected by that. Mm-hmm. So if these three men were in a different area and had the same dispute, mm-hmm.
would
there
have ended
been a suicide?
The same way? And I don't know about that whole suicide situation either, by the way.
Oh, you don't?
No, I'm not sure about that.
Okay. All right. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's a curve.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I mean, maybe Peleg needs a voice too. I don't know him very well, but I don't know. That's a question in my mind.
What I know for sure is that Foster is not cursed the way we think of curses today. It certainly wasn't cursed by any witches or indigenous people. It's just that the land was unsuitable for permanent settlement, mm-hmm. and the region was marked with the sorrowful end of the Narragansett people that met their deaths by diseases that came from Europe. And the problem arises when we were trying to populate a land for a long-term occupation that was never meant to be built upon and occupied for long-term situations. And our ignorance created these problems. And instead of looking at our behavior and how we're doing stupid things again and again in the same area and taking responsibility, we are discarding the wisdom of the indigenous people and we're blaming it on a woman that lived in the 1800s and saying it must be her fault that things aren't going the way we want them here. And that's some bullshit. And it's some kind of ism. I don't know if it's like sexism, racism, whatever the hell it is, but it's an ism and we shouldn't be doing it.
Well, I do want to correct you on the fact that people are inhabiting Foster quite happily today. Historically speaking, it wasn't meant to be settled, or it wasn't conducive for settling the land and working the land and doing what worked in other places. It wasn't working in Foster, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So today it's very inhabitable and very charming and lovely. And I just want to shout out to Foster. You're lovely. Thank you for having us.
Yes. There are people living around Foster, but it wasn't a boom town. It's
right.
not.
It's not Chernobyl. It's habitable, all right?
Yes, it's habitable. It's just very sparsely habitable
okay.
today.
So let's go over our hits, shall we?
Yes, I'm excited for this. Okay. The land significance, the energy. Oh my gosh. The indigenous people, the ancient peoples that's been living there for tens of thousands of years were right under our feet and we had no knowing of it. Your turn.
I love that I was picking up on a woman living in seclusion, because Dolly essentially was living in seclusion without a husband, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I was picking up on Dolly.
Yeah, she was living on the road where people would stop and visit on their travels.
And
yes.
Tell me more about the road, Jill.
Oh my gosh. So Route 6 is haunted, is known to be haunted today.
And we did not know that when we were driving on Route 6.
No clue. No,
but you were feeling it. You were saying it.
Well, and Stony Brook Farm, I believe, too, you can Google it. That is known to be haunted. And Daniel's Pike, they call that haunted as well. And they have different hauntings around the areas and those different real sightings that people currently had.
I am floored about the significance of the mill, because I was literally like, I have to find the mill. I have to find the mill. And the mill.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah. And I think I was talking about that mill where Peleg Walker hanged himself.
Yeah. And that burned down.
And that burned down. That's no longer there, but I was looking for it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And the South Foster Union Chapel, the feeling of bustling activity, people use that, but not only for services of church, but they use it for other kind of gatherings like clubs, the KKK, Odd Fellows, or the Masons, whomever, were all up in that church.
When I was feeling a witch or a woman who knows potions and herbs, I think I was picking up on both the idea of a witch and the word witch, and then just a wise woman and the dichotomy between the two.
I also think it was a nod to the legend.
Mm-hmm.
Because
me too.
If you didn't say witch, I wouldn't have looked at the legend of the Witch of Foster.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hopkins Lot Cemetery.
Yes.
Oh my God. We were facing what looked like to be the entrance of a walking path.
Mm-hmm. We did not walk on that path.
We did not, because it felt haunted as fuck and someone was looking at us out of those trees.
Yeah.
And that was the path to the original Ramtail Mill.
Shut up right now.
Swear to God. Swear to God.
So if we would have gotten out of the car and walked on that trail, we would have been standing where the Ramtail Mill was and where it burned down.
Well, also, I have so many questions, because while we were in the car looking at the entrance to this walkway is when your phone fucked up.
Yes.
And we felt like we were being watched.
Yes.
So who was looking at us?
I don't know. I don't want to think about that, Jill.
And okay, the name Cole, that
Come
obviously
on,
is
that
a
was
I'm
incredible.
Not even. What about the sorrow, the heavy heart? Where did that come from?
Gosh, I mean, pick a person. There's so much sorrow in this area, so much, for so many different reasons.
Yeah.
Starting with the indigenous peoples and mm-hmm. ending with the KKK in the 1920s and even after all of the deaths on Route 6. But Jill,
yeah.
What is the significance of Hopkins Lot Cemetery? Is someone important buried at Hopkins Lot Cemetery?
I'm glad you asked that, because Dolly Jocelyn Cole is buried there and her husband.
Very good. Yes. So we have just come full circle.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. What are your thoughts why this is significant today?
The first thing that comes to mind is we often look at history as, oh, they were so stupid back then. We would never do that now. And when you really look at some of the things that we do, we're really repeating some of the same behaviors. They look a little different, but we're repeating some of the same behaviors. Like, you know, creating the legend of Dolly and perpetuating the legend of the witch of Foster, Rhode Island, which is, again, you know, metaphorically doing what the Puritans did to real life witches, right?
Exactly.
Singling out women and saying that they're guilty of something that they were not guilty of.
Exactly. Exactly right. And the emotion around that story, like you get drawn in by the fantastic story of a witch that cursed the land. But the reality is, it's a better story. Your emotions are engaged than if you were like, well, this land was never really inhabitable long term for the type of ways they were looking to inhabit it at the time. And I think if we really stop and check our emotions at the door and look for reasons why things are happening in a logical way, we would get more answers and be less assholes and blame witches for things.
And I just want to thank Dolly Cole for coming out to us and talking with us, and I hope that we gave her a voice and let everybody know that Dolly Cole is not a witch and it's just a story, people. There's no historical facts surrounding the legend of Dolly Cole.
But Foster is haunted as fuck and has bad mojo for a lot of different other reasons.
All right.
So
on that note,
let's tell everyone where they can find us.
Please do.
Please check out our website, commonmystics.net. Find us on all our socials at Common Mystics Pod.
Hey, and wherever you're listening, please leave us a positive review.
Like, share, subscribe, and share. Thank you so much. Our audience is growing and our numbers really perpetuate our feelings to keep this going. So thank you guys so much.
Yeah, and meet us on Patreon for more.
Oh my gosh. Detours. What are we talking detours?
I have no idea. We'll think of something. We'll think of something riveting.
Thank you so much, everyone. Good night.
Good night. Bye.
This has been a Common Mystics Media production. Editing done by Yokai Audio, Kalamazoo, Michigan.